This is Transistor, a science series from PRX.
I'm Genevieve Sponsler from PRX, and this is probably not a good confession to make, considering I'm hosting a science, tech, and math podcast. But I was one of those students who thought I wasn't going to need math. I still resist it sometimes, but then there are reminders of its importance. Like last week, I was sitting at a table next to a bunch of high school teachers at a diner, and they were talking about the Pythagorean theorem and how useful it is, and how hard that is to relay to students. This story from Ben Hardin is a reminder of the cool things math can do, away from desks and out in the world, at the Arctic Circle, to be precise.
100 miles from land, ice and snow extend in every direction, a landscape of intense white. Except for a dot of bright blue, that's Ken Golden's jacket.
Right now we're on part of the Arctic Ocean. We're standing on first year sea ice that's about 1 meter thick.
Ken wields a drill half his height. He's standing over it like he would a jackhammer, and he's drilling down through the ice.
You can feel some soft layers up near the surface. It's a very beautiful and unique setting to be in here, especially for a math professor.
You see, Ken's a little different than most people who work in the Arctic. He's a mathematician. In fact, he's even been called the Indiana Jones of mathematics.
Da 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 da.
Yeah, that's Ken. Clearly he digs the reference.
Doing mathematics, but going off to these crazy, far-flung places throughout the world and getting in all kinds of dangerous situations.
Working out on thin sea ice, getting stuck on the wrong side of giant fractures. Once, he was on board a burning ship.
A burning ship in Antarctica, my first time there.
But Ken's not doing these things just to brag. He uses these adventures to solve mysteries. Along the way, he makes connections between things you'd never think about linking up. Which brings us back to the ice that Ken's drilling into.
Perfect. Perfect, just what we wanted.
Ken pulls a thin cylinder of ice out of the hole he's drilled. He puts his eye right up to it. He's looking inside the ice. It's not like a clear column of glass. It's riddled with tiny channels that make it look milky white.
That's the unique thing about sea ice that many people don't realize. They say, oh, it's frozen water. It's just a solid piece of ice. But of course, in fact, it's very different from the ice cubes in a drink. That's pure water that's been frozen. Basically, it's a solid. But when seawater freezes, the salt sort of interferes.
The water molecules can't freeze with all that salt in the way. So the salt gets pushed to one side. What you end up with are these tiny channels of super salty water that run throughout the ice. And it's these channels that make sea ice different from the ice that comes out of your freezer. This ice is permeable. That means water can flow through it.
Yeah, sea ice is just an amazing substance. From extremely permeable all the way down to just almost like a granite.
Now, being able to predict when water can flow through ice isn't just something that's interesting to an obscure group of Arctic scientists. It matters. It dictates how sea ice freezes, how quickly ice can melt, how strong that ice is. Real things that help climate scientists understand how our planet is changing and how fast. But until Ken came along on one of his adventures in 1994, no one knew what conditions allowed water to flow through ice.
And one fateful night, it was in the middle of a raging storm. Winds were blowing probably 40, 50 knots. And I was out on the sea ice. All of a sudden, I see seawater flooding up on the surface and flooding the snow layer.
Right before his eyes, he was watching the sea ice switching from an impermeable granite to a permeable, leaky solid.
And literally in that instant, sort of all these bells went off in my head.
Math bells. He knew immediately what math to use to understand what was happening. It's called percolation theory.
So percolation theory, I like to call the theory of connectedness.
It goes like this. Think of the ice as a maze full of channels. Some that connect, others that dead end, all spread out through the ice. And the question is, how do you know when water can make it through that maze?
You might think, well, gee, to predict something so complicated, you might need a very detailed theory that incorporates all the gory details of sea ice microstructure. But that's not true.
Ken's theory is simple. Forget about solving the maze, charting all the twists and turns. Forget knowing exactly how the channels are connected. Ken says all you have to know is how many channels there are. If there are enough channels, they'll connect. According to the math, they have to. And you get more channels the warmer the ice is.
Coldest, a bunch of individual inclusions.
Very few water channels, all unconnected, nothing flows.
A little bit warmer, they start to grow.
Maybe a few channels start to join up.
Even warmer, they start to connect up with each other.
Larger groups of channels form.
And then finally, at a much higher temperature, it's like a continuous filament.
All of a sudden, continuous routes open up through the maze. You simply use the temperature to predict how many channels there are, and percolation theory will tell you if water can find a way through. The math doesn't even care about where exactly the water flows, just that it can, somewhere. Ken's intuition for using this math came from an unlikely place.
The answer was provided by realizing that the microstructure of sea ice is strikingly similar to the microstructure of radar-absorbing stealthy materials. Stealth technology, what they coat these aircraft with.
This might sound like quite a leap, but go with him for a second. The material that makes an aircraft invisible absorbs radar waves by turning them into electricity. This electricity then escapes through the material in tiny, complicated channels. Sound familiar?
I finally realized, hey, I think this is like sea ice.
Being a mathematician, Ken knew it didn't matter what the substance was, or even what was flowing through it, only that the principle is the same. All Ken had to do was borrow the stealth shielding math, make a couple of adjustments, and he could predict at which temperature ice becomes permeable. And just last year, he took this one step further. He realized that the same math that explains sea ice can explain what's happening in the bones of people with osteoporosis.
With osteoporosis, what's the problem? I mean, you've got a matrix of solid bone, and then what's filled into the holes is more fluid, you know, blood and fluid. And anyway, I'm not an expert on bone.
But turns out he doesn't have to be.
From a mathematical standpoint, it's an almost identical problem.
And so Ken used the ice math to develop a new method for imaging bones. This kind of thing is what he's all about, seeing math connections between subjects he often knows nothing about. But to make these connections, he has to get out from behind his desk, out into the world.
So to speak, getting your hands dirty, or frozen, as the case may be.
And while the Indiana Jones thing may be a little bit of a stretch,
I think it's good for mathematics. That's why I've allowed it to kind of propagate and to persist, because I think the general public has a certain view of mathematicians. Head in the clouds, they don't do anything that is applicable to reality and so on. But of course, mathematics is very applicable to reality.
For this Indiana Jones, math is the key not just for unlocking the mysteries of the world, but figuring out how to connect them over and over again. From the Arctic sea ice, I'm Ben Harden.
Ben brought us that story last year. He's a scientist too, and has a new gig as an assistant professor of oceanography at Sea Education Association in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. He'll be teaching undergrads aboard tall ships during their semester at sea. As always, visit us at transistor.prx.org for episode extras, like photos of Ken Golden in the Arctic. The Transistor team includes me, I'm Genevieve Sponsler, PRX Chief Content Officer John Barth, Erica Lance, and Lily Bowie. Transistor is supported by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science, technology, and economic performance. More at sloan.org. This is PRX.